This is Witchcraft Off the Beaten Path. I'm Molly Dyer. The date of today's episode is March 9th, 2022. Russia has invaded Ukraine since last we spoke. I know witches all over the world that are lending their energy and magic and candlelight to those fighting against the Russians, and specifically against Vladimir Putin. If you think about it and you haven't done so already, if you could, please send some strength energy to the Ukraine, to her people and her soldiers pushing back against the Russian troops, and especially to her children. Incidentally, this is the last episode of season two. The two-year anniversary of Witchcraft Off the Beaten Path is this Saturday, March 12th. There are a total of 96 episodes from the first two seasons. As of right now, this podcast has been downloaded more than 233,000 times worldwide. I feel ever so honored to be able to continue this podcast into a third season. Thank you so much for listening. Today's episode, again, the last episode of season two, is another in the series that's ridiculous, but I love it. Nonetheless, Witches in Jammies with Snacks. And yes, as somebody asked me, that is a direct ripoff of Jerry Seinfeld's Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee on Netflix. Mine is more fun, I think. My guest today, in their jammies with their snacks, is one of my favorite people on this whole planet, probably in our solar system, and one of my favorites to talk to on this podcast. Hello, Mortellus.
Hi,
how are you?
I feel like I'm subverting the whole in jammies bit. I am wearing the shirt I slept in, but I do have on jeans.
Oh, so. Well, that's okay. That's all right.
I carried that shirt right into the day.
I mean, I genuinely do that most days. Like, what I slept in is what I'm going to wear the next day. I don't care. My general uniform at the house is jammy pants, which I have on, and I can prove that to you, and some sort of like graphic tee. But look, can you see? Look at that. Total bedhead. So
I mean,
I have on my new Aunt Eek's shirt. Can you see my anatomical heart belongs to Aunt Eek?
Loves that.
I know. And that's new. Didn't sleep in it, but I did not do anything to my hair. For some reason, and this is completely beyond me why I did this, I put on lipstick for a podcast.
I mean, you do them better than me.
I have no idea why. I mean, like, I'm like, this will make everything look better, right? You know, and it's like one of my dark goth lipsticks. So I don't know why, but I do have popcorn, and you have some crunchy stuff too. Cause we were talking about, I usually eat cheese and that's soft and you can't really hear it, but.
Oh, I did want to say you commented that Witches and Jammies was a ripoff of Comedians in Cars. You should not feel bad because Jerry Seinfeld ripped that off as well. I have no fear of him hearing this ever. So,
who did he rip that off from, I wonder?
So I know he went to court about it.
Oh, God. Did he really? Holy crap.
Oh, yeah, he got sued. He literally got sued about it. Crap. Who sued him? I have to look now.
Okay.
Everyone can listen to Witches and Jammies Googling stuff. That's what we're doing.
Have you watched any of the episodes of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee?
I watched one because someone was like, look at him be a tool to somebody. And I was like, oh my God, yeah, it's really mean-spirited, actually. This is not fun.
There are some really good ones that are not necessarily mean-spirited. And there are, yeah, I mean, I have my own issues with Jerry Seinfeld for other reasons, you know, but I did steal the name, so hope I don't get sued. I'm not making a dime off this, so maybe I won't.
Oh, let's see. So he was accused of ripping off a series called Carpool, as well as Jay Leno's Garage, and Too Many Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
Oh,
and Comedians on Bikes Getting Soup, and like there are a few.
So. This is nothing new under the sun kind of a thing.
Not at all.
Okay.
I amended that list. There were several more.
Okay. Well, I don't feel bad.
Don't feel bad at all.
Nothing is copyrighted and I'm not making a dime off it. So what I was saying a second ago too, is that, I'm sorry, I put some popcorn in my mouth, obviously. generally I have like, you know, non-noise making snacks. What's the fun in that? What is the fun in that? You know? Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, man. Is that a potato chip? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm into the Ruffles now. Like the cheap knockoff brand Ruffles. They have ridges. They're way crispier.
Yeah.
Yes.
The other day when we were texting back and forth, and you said,
"Hang on, I got to crack open root beer."
There you go.
Did we get that audio?
I did. That was beautiful. What is the point of doing this if you can't hear the snack? You know. So, and I'm probably, fortunately for everybody but Martellus, I'm probably going to be talking with my mouth full of popcorn. So my apologies ahead of time.
Hard shout out to Barks. It's one of the best root beers. I love it. It's got like a vanilla twinge, and it's the only caffeinated root beer out there.
Just, you know, I spent most of my life thinking it was Bargs with a G. I didn't realize it was a Q.
It's a weird font.
It is a weird font because it looks like a, I thought it was Bargs. Barg. All right. So I have a question I want to ask you real quick.
I will answer it while I fish this Reese's piece out of my tits where it went.
Or just leave it there. It'll warm up for later and be a lovely, you know, comforting snack. All right. On your website, in and amongst the many wares that you sell, I want you to explain the definition of the words ossuary and revenant. Ooh. Because you have, listen, I'm wearing my ossuary solid cologne right now, and it's delicious. Yay. My husband loves it. He does. So what's an ossuary? I know what it is, but what's an ossuary?
You should know, as I answer that question, that amusingly, I have more than once gotten the exact same review unsolicited from multiple people about that scent.
Yep, that their husbands or whoever likes it.
Quote, a panty dropper. People keep saying that to me. But
well, apparently I'm applying it in the wrong place. It's delicious. It's really wonderful.
An ossuary is a place where bones are stored, period. And what is your meat suit if not an ossuary?
I mean, I'm a big giant bone storage. I'm a bag of bones. And then revenant. Explain what revenant means.
Revenant is... God, I could not chew a gummy bear, right? Everyone, when Molly said bring snacks, I did. I have like six things here.
Yeah, like, I feel like I'm woefully underprepared with just popcorn and like a Sprite Zero, you know, which means I'm probably going to burp. I mean, because I don't need a Sprite Zero to burp, but I'm probably going to.
For anyone who's ever seen me live stream or teach a class, I've always got this very cool, like, ceramic skull behind me on my shelf. And what people don't know is it's filled with, like, discount Halloween candy. And
oh, nice.
Because it's just full of snacks all the time because I have a major sweet tooth. But
nice. I carry fun-sized Milky Ways in my bag because I'm a diabetic. Oh. That's why. Not for fun
Milky
reasons.
Ways are great, though.
Well, I'll tell you what, Milky, that's my favorite candy bar for sure. But when I crash, I wear an insulin pump now. So I still do have crashes sometimes because I rage bolus and whatever. And then, well, that was way too much insulin. And then I'm, you know, like I'm a 60. The little fun size Milky Ways, it takes about 30 minutes, but it'll get me up to about 150, which is like a safe place to be after you've crashed, you know, and then it'll come down. But it's such a shame I have to carry my favorite candy bar in my purse and snack sizes, you know.
Oh, no.
What a shame. I hate that.
I had gestational diabetes with the twins, which was super not fun. And I don't envy you that being part of your everyday.
Having to wear an insulin pump has really changed a lot of things in my life for the better. It is a pain in the ass. And I mean, there's no telling when it's going to go off beeping, like in a movie theater, because I either need to charge the battery or put more insulin in it, or whoops, my sugar's too high or too low, whatever. But the nice thing is too, I don't know if you've ever experienced really low blood sugar. A lot of people have if they're hypoglycemic. Low blood sugar for me, I mean, like once it starts dropping, it starts to fall like a bag of rocks, and
oh, yes.
I can get to like 50 pretty quick without realizing it. And so it sends my Dexcom, which is a continuous glucose meter, my Dexcom app will send notifications to my stepson and my husband to say, ooh, her blood sugar is, you know, tanking out. So they'll call me if they're at work and say, you need to eat something, you know. Oh, thanks. I didn't realize that. I was just about to pass out. So, you know.
Since we're doing just like casual stuff, right? Yeah. We're not being direct. I'll share something with you that's funny. You're like, I don't know if I'm giving away personal stuff. Edit it out if you have to. But like, mm-hmm. You're new to the ADHD journey, right?
No, I don't need to edit that. I am new. I am on medication. Okay. And I have a recent diagnosis. Yeah, I've shared that before, I think.
So I spent many, many years with people being like, you have boobs, you probably have depression a bunch or something, and like not getting that right. So by the time I was diagnosed in my 30s, it was like, what? Mm-hmm. I can live and be productive? Neat.
So it took me to 50 to get that. Seriously. And did I ever tell you what my mom said to me about ADHD?
Yeah, I think so, yes.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you again because it's hysterically funny, I think. I said, Mom, I'm pretty sure I made an appointment with a doctor because I'm pretty sure I have ADHD. Her answer was, oh, well, yeah, sure. I've known that your whole life. And I'm like, why the fuck didn't you do something about it when I was younger? But she didn't want to put me on Ritalin because in the 70s and early 80s, Ritalin was kind of a shit show. And I think they've improved it now. I don't know. But so, yeah, it was obvious to everybody but me that I had ADHD. And my doctor said profound ADHD. So I need to go on meds.
I'm excited to get up every day and take my diet meth so that I can live like a normal person.
And you know, you and I are on the same meds. And so, yeah, it is kind of my diet meth, you know. I'm so very glad for it though, because I didn't take it one day. I don't know why. I forgot to take my meds till like 1 p.m. And I can super tell when I haven't taken it, you know. And I'm like, what's happening? I mean, like, I'm just an idiot now. So yeah. Without taking it.
I read a funny story once on Reddit where a person was talking about they were young and stupid and doing young, stupid people things. And they were the punchline of the story was how I found out I had ADHD. Mm-hmm. They'd gone to a party in their early 20s in college, and somebody was passing around some kind of drug, and being young and dumb and stupid, they're like, yeah, sure. And they paid money for this, whatever it was, to take, and they didn't even know what it was. And they spent the whole party being like, you know, I feel great, but I don't think I feel anything other than just, what did you give me?
Yeah.
Turns out it was Adderall, and they realized that they paid a lot of money to learn that they had ADHD because they felt super normal when they never had before. And I thought, what a funny way. I was just going to say to that end, your listeners should know that the whole time we've been talking, I've been keeping a list of things my brain went, ooh, a squirrel at, uh-huh. So that I would remember comment on them.
That's your shinies list, right? That's the shinies.
So far, I've got Ukraine ritual, dead people blood, revenants, lifesavers are for diabetics, and Walter's old man balls. So we can get around to those at any time.
You know, listen, I'm going to tell you, you know, we talked about our t-shirts earlier that you slept in yours, but I changed mine, right? Well, I changed mine right in the middle of our dining room because I was running out of time. And like, you know, my stepson's home, but I know he's in his bedroom with the door closed, and I did it really fast. Oh, sorry. I did it really fast. But what went through my head is my luscious lady titties, because you said that on one of our podcasts when, and so every time I think about my boobs, I think about luscious lady titties now. So that's part of my everyday lexicon is luscious lady titties, as quoted by Mortellus.
These titties are non-binary too. That's
non-binary. So they're not. So would you call them luscious vady titties?
Sure.
Okay.
Let's do that. I'm with it.
Your luscious vady titties. Yeah, excellent.
I love vadies and gentlemen thems. That's my favorite.
Me too. I have a friend who wants to be called Mavady. You know?
Oh, yes.
Because that's
very proper.
So so let's talk about real quick your new book. Yeah.
Let me just like ADHD my brain out though. Like,
go ahead.
Revenant is
The Return.
That's The Returned Dead, right? Technically, I am a revenant. I have been dead, declared dead, and spontaneously revived. So I am dead people walking.
Okay.
That's a revenant.
Yeah, I did know that about you, but I didn't know that the term revenants was related to that or was appropriate for that. That's really cool.
Things that fall in that category would be zombies, vampires, anything that has been dead but isn't quite exactly dead anymore.
Yeah. Like a Mortellus.
Like a Mortellus.
Like a Mortellus.
I'm eating Reese's Pieces. That is that sound for everyone's edification.
Okay. I'm still on the popcorn, and I'm sure it's audible. Sorry, but not
Reese's
sorry.
Pieces are far superior to M&M's. I will fight anyone that disagrees with that.
For sure. I mean, that's scientifically proven. There's empirical evidence that they're better. I love M&M's, don't get me wrong. But Reese's Pieces, first of all, the outer shell ratio to peanut butter is far superior than the outer shell ratio to chocolate on Reese's Pieces, because they break easier and you don't have to go like, they just kind of like, they just sort of crush. It's wonderful. They will melt in your hands, not in your mouth, but I don't care.
My favorite way to eat M&M's or Reese's Pieces or Skittles or anything like that is to take two in my fingers and smash them.
Yes.
And whichever one breaks, you eat that one.
Oh my God, that's the same way I do it. I swear to all that is holy. Uh-huh.
So at the end, you have like the winner, and then you can eat them and feel superior.
Did anybody in your family ever crack walnuts that way too, where you crack two together and you eat the one
Absolutely.
That breaks? Yeah, my grandfather all day with his bare fucking hands. Huge bare hands.
Fun fact.
I love fun facts.
That works very well, actually, because the best thing at breaking something is exactly that same thing. So, like, if you want to break someone's skull, another skull is a great thing to break it with. They have the same density. So
smash
holding
coconuts
two walls
together. Yeah.
Yeah, like two walnuts held together, one of them will break because they have equal density.
I really love the fact that we were talking about walnuts and something that the best way to break something is to break it with its the same thing. And you went to human skulls immediately. I love that.
Of course. I want people listening to know that if you have teenagers who idiotically like headbutt each other, they will crack their goddamn skull. That's what that will happen.
Do you speak from experience with that, or is that just an off the cuff remark?
I speak from embalming people with cracked skulls.
Oh God. Okay, so I do want to talk about your first book real quick. Do I Have to Wear Black? If you have not yet read this book by Mortellus, it is funerary customs from kind of all over the world through history, and it's really very interesting. And it's available everywhere fine books are sold, including Mortellus's website, which is mortellus.com. And your new book, which I believe is called The Bones Fall in a Spiral, is coming out September 8th. And can you tell us about this book? Some abouts about this book?
Oh, gosh. Let's see.
Without giving it all away, you know what I'm saying?
There's a lot to say about this book.
Okay.
It's funny. I think my first book, Crunch, Crunch, Crunch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too.
My first book, I think, maybe gave a big audience the impression that I was like, I was sort of pigeonholed in an area, right? Like, mortician person writes about death. And I don't think a lot of people put thought into the fact that I am a witch. I am an occultist. I do magics all the time.
Yeah.
So this book was really me getting to step into that area and talk about that more. The first book were things I had to say. This book was things I wanted to say.
Okay.
And that's kind of a distinction. But getting to talk about necromancy and just sort of the fundamental practicality of it was huge for me. And I'm just really proud to be able to put it out there. It's not in my publisher's wheelhouse. I don't think that's That's new. The discomfort is evident, but we're working together. We're getting it out there. But I don't know. I think I wanted to sit down and write, the same kind type flavor of book everyone else writes about stuff they like. Here is my favorite way of doing things and spells and stuff. But I couldn't do that. The more I worked on it, the more I realized that we don't really have necromancy books out there in a modern context that aren't either scholarly or I cough written by a bigot in a Halloween font cough. But whoops.
Whoops.
Whoops. No, there's, I mean, let's be real. People are already going to hate me, so I'll just say it flatly. There are some really terrible books out there right now, and there aren't many. So I guess I'm narrowing down what I don't like real simply. But I mean, they all sort of have heteronormative garbage in it. It's all like, I'm sorry, why does death work need to have like weird sex stuff in it? Too much men can do this better than women, forget anybody else because I didn't mention them type stuff. And books citing actual Nazi propaganda
Oh,
exists.
geez. Oh, my God.
Seriously. This was one of those times where it was like, I have to do this thoroughly and I have to do it well so that people can kind of see what's out there and what some differences are. And it's still a lot of my own practice. So I'm constantly saying, hey, this is my UPG. And yeah, we need to do that or we're not saying anything new or interesting, but we just have to be clear about it. And I now have the hiccups, by the way, from this root beer.
Oh, that's going to be an awesome extra.
But yeah, so instead of writing that really straightforward book, I had to write something with a dense bibliography so that people knew what was out there and what they could research, but with a big disclaimer at the top, like, hey, I had to read a lot of crap, and some of this is crap. I sound like a pretentious asshole. I get that. I get there's privilege inherent in the words coming out of my mouth, but if you pick up a book and you flip through it and you see no citations, no footnotes, that should scare you a little bit. If there's no bibliography, be real scared. If the bibliography is like one page and it's mostly like blog articles and YouTube videos, also very scary. These are clues. These are not good books.
They need actual citations that are verifiable and
Right. And sometimes to research a topic thoroughly, you have to cite stuff that you know is trash. But usually it's in the context of saying, this is trash, by the way. So context counts, but. So I wound up writing something that I knew, I don't know, I don't have good words to parse at it over my potato chips, but it's
Ruffles.
Ruffles, my cheap ass ruffles, because
Cheap ass ruffles
Lay's are
with
like,
cheap ass ridges.
Lay's are assholes who like pay scabs to come in and break picket lines. Not nice. Not nice people. So I
No.
will not buy their chips. That's.
We are a boycotting family here too, so
And right, and it does like 0% good, right? Because Walmart is still going to buy 1,000 pounds of chips from them, and they still make their money or whatever. But
yeah, but
it's
still.
like it's the tiny symbolic protest. It's all we have.
You know what? Chick-fil-A, fucking delicious. I don't eat there. I haven't eaten there in about, I think, 14 years now. And I'm not one of those people that's like, oh, their chicken sucks. It's terrible anyway. It's delicious. I used to love getting those little chicken with pickles on them and ooh, so good. Don't need it though. Don't need it. I don't have to have it. I'm not going to give them any of my money. And it's the principle of
Someone's
the thing.
gonna write me an email after this and be like, Barks Root Beer hates the gays or something, and then I'll cry.
Well, I mean,
But I'll
that's
know it and I'll stop drinking
yeah, exactly. I'll cry with you because I do love Barks Root Beer, or formerly Bargs Root Beer. That's what I, you
it.
know. So The Bones Fall in a Spiral is coming out September 8th, and we will be able to, you can pre-order it right now everywhere but your website.
Yes.
Okay.
But I did want to say, though, I think it was one of those situations where I knew I couldn't just sit down and say what I wanted to say without giving people an idea of actually how to do this practice. Because, bless them, nobody deserves to have to go see all the crap I had to see with my perfectly good eyeballs to figure that out on their own. So, I wound up writing a practice more or less from the ground up, and shoot me, just shoot me. I am a Gardnerian Wiccan, so there's some Wiccan flavor in there.
What's wrong with that?
It's a choice. I'm not.
There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, do you get shit for being a Wiccan or a Gardnerian Wiccan?
Well, you think there's a certain amount of. It has been true at times in history, in modern history. It sounds like I'm nervous about that question. I just can't get words out. I can't speak for a human right now.
Guilty?
Leave that in. Just leave it in. No, I think at points in history, it has felt like every book on the shelf had a Wiccan flavor. Like everything was Wicca washed. Like that was a real thing for an amount of time. So there's still kind of this eyebrow quirk at content that has that sort of flavor in there. It's not a Wiccan book. It is written by a Wiccan, so it is going to have some stuff in it.
Right. Yeah.
I bothered to write you all necromantic Sabbat rituals, though, so, like, deal with me.
Really? Necromantic Sabbat rituals? Okay.
There's a full practice in there.
I can't wait. I can't wait. You know, and obviously, we have to schedule something for after September 8th, too. But, you know, because we're... And speaking of new books coming out, Amy Blackthorne's new Blackthorne's Protection Magic came out last week. Is that right?
That's right. I contributed to that. I have a
It must have been on the first because it is a Wiser book. Is that right?
Yes.
Oh my goodness. Look at me paying attention to shit all of a sudden. Thanks, ADHD meds. Yeah, did you do the foreword or introduction?
No, I contributed a spell in there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Somehow, inexplicably, I don't have my copy yet. I don't know how I didn't order that, but I have got to. Amy, are you listening? I need to order a copy of that. I'll order it straight from Amy.
It's on page 23 is where the bit that I wrote started. I just have to have books side me. So.
Oh, excellent.
But of course, it's death magic. Of course. So you'll have to go grab a copy and see what that's about. I was really proud to get to be a part of it.
That is really
Amy's
cool.
Awesome.
Amy
it's
is
a great
so
book.
Wonderful. I absolutely adore Amy. So for anybody that has just found this podcast, Witchcraft Off the Beaten Path, and maybe this is the first episode they're hearing, explain what you mean when you say necromancy and death magic.
Okay, so I've done this routine in the past.
Yeah, I know. You've done it on this podcast. I'm just going to ask you to do it again.
If you say you practice necromancy, someone will inevitably explain to you in a pretentious manner that... Imagine that white guy or whatever. Well, actually,
he's a white
necromancy,
guy. Necromancy.
Necromancy is divination with the dead because the suffix mancy means to divine, etc. Something. They'll say something wrong like that definition. And then someone else will pipe up and push their glasses back from the bridge and go, actually, you probably mean seomancy because that's divination with shades and nobody's working with corpses, which the necro implies.
You've never actually heard somebody say these things before.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Hundreds of times.
That is horrible. Okay.
But they were all white guys too, by the way.
Of course. I would not doubt that for a New York second.
Or any white guys listening to the podcast, you're probably a nice person because you listen to this podcast.
Thank you. I really hope so.
I feel like you'd probably quit by now.
Right.
You were not a cool person. So if you're still here, congrats.
Good Lord. There's an airplane in my backyard. Can you hear that?
I can.
Okay. I didn't know if it was just me. All right. It's gone now. Go ahead. Sorry.
I doubt your listeners can hear it, but my very, very southern neighbors are loudly blaring Kenny Rogers the Gambler outside right now.
On a warm summer's evening, on a train bound for nowhere. Listen,
it's
1980,
surreal.
Whatever it is. That's crazy.
It's creeping in. I too know all the lyrics to that song.
But do you know all the lyrics to "The Devil Went Down to Georgia"?
Yes, I do.
God damn it! So do I.
So I've said this before, but I didn't grow up in a home where we had like TV, radio, all that stuff. But my father was a musician and he played in a lot of like shitty Southern cover bands. So I learned a lot of like, I could sing you Freebird a cappella right now if you want to. We'd
Yeah,
be all
for real.
set.
I'll be your backup singer. I could do it too.
But necromancy,
Yeah. Oh yeah,
I would
that.
define. I would define it like Daniel Ogden defined it in Greek and Roman Necromancy, which is one of my favorite modern books on the topic. It is a scholarly work. It's not a practice-oriented book, but it has a lot of history in it. Historically, the word would have probably been used to define really any magic that involved death, the dead, the dying, ancestors. It can be a pretty broad term, and that's how I use it.
Okay. I think that what I identify the most within that is the what I would just call ancestor veneration. That would be necromancy. That's death magic.
By my definition,
Yes,
certainly.
by well, I'm definitely going by your definition. So
I would also put things like death care work. If you're doing death doula work, if you're a mortician, you're practicing necromancy. If you're a pagan person and you're ritualizing that work, it's necromancy. I think it's a bold claim to assume a modern day practitioner of death magic is not working with human remains. Lots of us are. I've got my lovely skull friend just off frame of the camera behind me.
Yeah. Is that a human skull?
It is.
Oh, amazing.
I acquired this wine a few months ago. It was an osteological specimen at a medical school, and it was damaged by some vandals. So a great deal of it's missing. It wasn't. It's not a desirable piece for a collector. So
Sure.
I adopted it. I have lots of stragglers around.
That's really interesting. I'm kind of a bone collector myself, but no, I mean small, tiny bones like bird bones. Nothing like your collection or what you have. Not collect. I shouldn't say collection. I think that
Oh, these are
trivializes
my
it.
friends.
Yeah.
These are my friends. Yeah.
I trivialized it on accident. Sorry. It's your
That's
friends.
cool. They are. They're my buddies. I think that I have a different sort of view of the bone trade than most. We can't say it's ethical because we have no idea how someone died or what their life was like. We just
Yeah.
can't. The
Right.
best we can do is be responsible, which would mean staying within the bounds of the law, acquiring pieces that are legal to own, purchasing them in a legal manner from a source that's reasonable.
Right.
Everything I have is medical specimens that have been retired, but in the work that I do, in mortuary work, if you're behind the scenes much in medical schools, pathology labs, body farms, anything like that, anybody that's worked those kinds of jobs has been in a situation where they saw a display skeleton or skull or piece literally wind up in the garbage. It
Oh,
was
that's such a
broken.
shame.
It was broken, damaged, old. What are they supposed to do with it? Aside from sell it to a collector, it's not getting a funeral. At this point, it's owned
Yeah.
by an institution and treated like you might a box of pencils.
Right.
So
Yeah.
half the time, it's either me going, could I take that home with me? Or it's trash. And that's very sad to me. So.
Yeah. So if I found like, a human femur bone on eBay, I probably shouldn't try to buy
You
that.
should not buy that.
Yeah.
Correct.
What about haunted music boxes?
I'm gonna go with no also. There's a kid in Brooklyn that resells medical specimens like I collect, and had a hard time recently on TikTok. It was this whole controversy where people were like, yeah, they won't say that their bones are ethically sourced and this, that, and the other thing. And as I just explained, you literally cannot say that because
You don't know.
when a donor signs a form, they're anonymous. We
Yeah.
don't know. We just can't. That's how HIPAA laws work. But if you're talking about these pieces just winding up in closets or the garbage or like what's going to happen to them, and for people that care enough to sort of collect those and make them available for people that care about them, love them, I do think that's worth protecting.
Oh, sure.
And for anybody that sort of rails against that kind of collection or ownership, should really think about what it means to make it so that people can't do that.
So I want to talk about something with you that we talked about over text about a week ago or so. And this is something that I've gotten a lot of listener feedback about. People want spells for it. People want energy, et cetera, et cetera. And that's depression. And I am currently going through a bout of depression, and I know me well enough to know I'm okay. You know, I'm not at that point where I need to like go to the hospital or something, which by the way, there's no shame in that whatsoever. I just want to put that out there. But I have clinical depression, and it's chronic. So, I mean, I've had it since for longer than I have ever, you know, acknowledged it or known about it. And I've been under a therapist's care off and on for, gosh, close to 35 years, you know, because I think it's necessary for me. I'm not currently, and I'm considering that as an option, but I have had enough depression lately that this is the first episode I've done in 3 weeks. I couldn't. And part of it actually was medical stuff. I did have a surgical procedure, but it's the kind of depression that is really identifiable by, I just can't, period. Yeah. You know, not, I don't want to live anymore. It's just, it's the, I just can't. And I couldn't, you know, you can't shower or make dinner or brush your teeth or whatever, you know, however that manifests for, okay, you're good. Stop growling. However it manifests for an individual is exactly that. It's individual, you know, but mine manifests in, not oddly, rampant creativity, but I just can't. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I see, I understand why. I'm not calling myself an old master or anything from, you know, like the art world, but I understand why the old masters, you know, a lot of them were just super fucking horribly in a hole depressed, you know. Comedians do the same thing. Comedians, I mean, they're not happy people generally behind the scenes. So I don't know. There's that connection between depression and creativity. And I definitely have that. And I try to express myself in ways that I'm able to do, but, yeah. So I'm really sorry about not having done an episode in 3 weeks. It just wasn't feasible for me to be able, I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. So, thank you, Mortellus, for listening to me, last week when I was kind of, the day got shittier, actually, after I reached out to you. I don't know if I reached out to you or you reached out to me, but the day got worse, but it's better now. So thank you for listening. And I just want to remind everybody listening that depression, more people have it than don't. Don't let anyone ever stigmatize you. And if you need help, reach out to me. I will point you in the right direction. I'm not a therapist. I'm not going to give you therapy. But I will point you in the right direction. I'll help you find a resource if you need that. And I'll also help you find resources for the money it would cost to do that if you need help with that. So I'll do the absolute best here. I can. Okay, good. Same thank here. You. Pinky swear over Zoom camera.
Pinky swears.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. I really am okay. I mean, like, no one has to worry about me, you know? Well, I mean, there's always a reason to worry about me, but yeah.
We're all a mess. Let's just worry about each other. We'll do it. Yeah. We'll take turns.
Let's talk about poop and fart necromancy, because I really want to talk about that. That also came up in texts. Please, please enlighten the listeners about poop and fart necromancy. I can't pronounce the words.
Oh, God. I should not try either. That would probably be embarrassing for all of us.
Were they German words, or was it like a old
Scandinavian.
English? Scandinavian.
Yeah, one of my favorite little things is, and this happens to you, right? This is sort of the author, college student, whatever. Like, it's the condition of anyone that has to get down rabbit holes. Maybe yeah. That's your depression, is Wikipedia at night, and you just read forever. But if you find yourself in like an area much, which I have, you know, extensive research on a topic, you're always going to find like the weird shit that just sort of stands out. And that's my favorite stuff to collect.
Is the weird shit. Yeah.
That's necromancy. Okay. Mm-hmm. This is not as far as you want me to go, but sort of a fun detail. A lot of necromancy rituals sort of suggest that they should be done on a Thursday, which I could like talk about that forever, like sort of the significance, and it's a curiosity area for me. And most of them demand like late afternoon time periods. That sort of stuff is weird, right? And it's interesting, and I love that. But Thursday, why Thursday? Thursday is one of those sort of weirdly liminal days where you're like, what the fuck day of the week is it? Right. And maybe that's what makes Thursday great.
So yeah, Thursday is that. It's definitely a liminal. It's an in between, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, it's perfect.
It's not quite the weekend. You lose track of what day is it. Wednesday? Is it Friday? I don't know. Yeah. Maybe that's why. But I stumbled on a lot of stuff. One of my favorite little quips is there's just a line, and I'm pretty sure. Oh, I can't remember if it was Barrett or Levy. Someone's going to email me about this. I just know it. But it says that the soul of a necromancer is moist and turgid. And this is a flat statement. There's no lead up or explanation. It doesn't clarify. And I was left thinking about that for weeks.
Moist and turgid.
Moist and turgid.
It's incredibly descriptive.
I know, right? Like, write me a love letter. Why don't you?
Yeah, how often do you hear the word turgid, though? I mean, who uses that in polite conversation? Nobody. That's really funny. So is your soul moist and turgid?
I guess it has to be. That's an empirical statement, right? It's a fact.
Yeah.
It's in a book.
It's in a book. Exactly. So there was, so I'm going to talk about that spell you told me about where somebody actually was burned at the stake.
Oh, we're doing fart runes.
Right. Yeah. I'm going to pull that up real quick. Hold on, because I have it saved somewhere.
I'm glad I sent you something you thought was worthy of saving.
Oh, God. For real. Okay. Fretrenir. I don't know if that's the right word or not.
Let's go with yes. We'll just.
Okay, sure. And I apologize to anybody that is Scandinavian for me just massacring part of your language. But you said that this guy was burned at the stake after confessing to casting this on a local girl.
And long story short, there was a falling out over some property, new church clergy person, whatever. It was one of those sort of we live in the village type of stories where everyone's fighting about something. And father and son were burned at the stake after confessing to casting the eponymous fart runes on, I believe, the daughter of this minister. Apparently the situation got quite bad, and it was like, hey, did someone do fart runes at this girl? And they were like, yes, we did.
You're fucking right.
You're
we did
right. You're goddamn right. So there we were. And
what had happened was, oh God.
Yeah, there's a lot of fart runes, actually.
Can I read the spell? Can I read the spell?
Sure.
Okay. So
you should know that you are meant to mark out the runes in thigh blood on a tree of a certain type. Series of runes that accompany the what you're going to read is actually a description of what's supposed to occur.
Sure. Okay.
It's
a thigh blood, though, that's very specific.
That is very specific.
From a human or
yes.
Okay, well, necromancy, of course, a human.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, so the description, you began it with a quotation mark and some ellipses. Afflict your belly with great shitting and shooting pains. And all these may afflict your belly with very great farting, which I've had recently. So maybe somebody did this on me. May your bones split asunder. May your guts burst. May your farting never stop, neither day nor night. That is a thing of beauty. I have to tell you. Oh my God.
I don't think I've ever farted until my bones exploded. That's levels.
I mean, at some point, is that even still a fart? You know, if your bones start splitting, is that gas really?
I don't know. That's, I mean,
that's nuclear.
We can debate that. That is nuclear.
So that's the poop and fart necromancy portion of the podcast. So if you...
There could be more poop and fart necromancy right now.
Hit it. I'm not stopping you, Mavady.
One of my favorites is from the Graveyard Wanderers, which is also... the book itself is not Scandinavian, but it's sort of... I'm using that term like it means anything as well, by the way. I'm hopefully not making anybody mad. I'm being folksy, y'all.
I'm folksy. I'm from the South. Yeah.
Reading chips and stuff. I'm not being specific, but Dr. Tom Johnson, mm-hmm. who I'm going to assume is not a very nice person because he also wrote spells that included details like, here's a spell to help you rape somebody.
Oh my. Okay. So I'm hoping this guy is long dead.
Oh, let's see. By the way, I do not co-sign that doctor title. I have no idea if that's accurate. This particular line, being line 56, is titled, "To give someone diarrhea," and it's spelled old-timey. I love that old-timey space, like D-I-A and a bunch of R's. H-O-E-A. Uh-huh. But it says simply, there's no other instruction. There's no other text. This is the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Take a nail from out of a coffin.
Oh yeah.
Nail it into his feces. Period. That's what it says. That's the whole thing.
So it must have been a lot easier to get somebody's poop back then. That's what I'm thinking.
That's my thought, yeah.
Maybe this is the kind of thing where somebody went and shit right in the street, or there was an outhouse and you had to kind of, God
or
knows.
Maybe a housekeeper wrote this and they're like, fuck that guy.
Fuck that guy.
While I'm emptying the chamber pot, I'm just going to
nail his duke. I'm going to put a nail right through this duke. And then
okay, this guy's got it real. But did anybody do the nail poop spell? So what had happened was.
That just the thought. I mean, and we, I can't wrap my brain around it, but it's so funny. And somebody probably took this with the utmost sincerity and seriousness to nail somebody's doo-doo, because I'm nine, you know, to nail somebody's shit, you know, with a coffin nail. I mean, not just a nail. Don't just get a fucking nail. It's not a 10-penny nail. This is a coffin nail.
It has to have been pulled from a coffin. It can't. That's a big soapbox for me, right? There's a lot of times if you find coffin nails, they have been made ritually into mm-hmm. coffin nails. They're buried in a cemetery or that kind of thing. And that's cool. Use it for rituals where you can. They definitely have purpose. But asterisk. If you're doing necromantic work, you need materials that have been functionally touched by death. So you need materials that you know were responsibly and, if possible, ethically gathered and were actually from that purpose. So you would want a legitimate coffin nail pulled from a coffin for these kinds of spells. So,
which I'll say you can find at mortellus.com, by the way. Do you still have them?
I do. And I charge very little for them, which I'm probably just like eating it on costs. I know that I am. I make like no profit ever. I filed for my taxes. I made like $400 last year. It's crazy.
Oh my God.
You know, like $460 dollars.
It sounds like you didn't sell a single book, but I know you did. And
I did. Yes.
And authors are obviously, most of them, not in it to get rich.
Correct. I go in the hole a lot, though, because of, that thing I said a few minutes ago, responsibly and ethically. Mm-hmm. I want to acquire things like used coffins that, you know, we're not digging up graves and stealing them from people. So what I'm doing is using connections in the funeral industry to find rental or shipping cost coffins that are no longer in use, or disinterment coffins that are going to be incinerated or something like that I can purchase. And that is not cheap. But that means I can pull all the nails out of them over a course of a couple of days in my yard with my kids and a carpenter's hammer just out there, just like disassembling the caskets. And I have them on my website for $5. And when I have them, I have them. When I don't, I don't. But
Right.
if you need one to nail in someone's poop, you're all set though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you've got someone else's poop. And if you do, I have questions about that. But I want to also point out, if you're new to Witchcraft Off the Beaten Path, or if you're new to Mortellus, Mortellus also sells amazingly scented, beautifully scented candles. And they have wooden wick, and that wood is coffin wood.
I reclaim it from.
Yeah. So do you and your partner at home just have like a big giant casket storage place in your garage?
God. No, thank you. We don't even have a garage. We live in like 800 square feet. I'm recording this episode from a shed in my yard.
Are you really?
Yeah. I have like a little garden shed. And for anyone who's ever seen me stream or anything, it looks like an office because I went to Lowe's and bought like sad $11 paneling to tack up around this area, and I put a shelf, so it looks, what you can see looks like an office, but it's fucking not.
I mean, how sad is it if it's the job done, you know? So
I'm trying to turn my computer. I don't know if you can actually see, but that's the other half of this room. There's a bench here where I pack boxes, and this is trash that I'm gesturing at, this box of old boxes. My kid's wagon over there.
All right.
And that shelf in the back is candles and things I've made.
All right. I mean,
and this is my pretend office over here in the corner.
Yeah, your pretend office. This is where you play make believe.
It is. It's my make believe office.
I mean, seriously, it's pretty cool.
But there's a little loft in this shed where I put extra coffin wood that I haven't cut yet or that sort of thing. But, I mean, I'm not wealthy. I couldn't buy a bunch of them. So I might buy one and disassemble it and use the pieces. And if there's any scrap pieces, I'll hang on to them until they have a purpose. I use every bit of everything.
Yeah.
And then once that's gone, I might buy another one if I can find it. And, you know.
And am I mistaken in, did I dream this, or do you actually have or own a Victorian glass coffin?
I have a viewing window.
Oh, a viewing window. Okay. Yeah. So the whole thing's not glass, because that would be gross. It'd be real juicy at the bottom. Yeah.
Be difficult to deal with. Like it's about 300 years old, this particular toe pincher. I have disassembled it. I've already decided what it will be. Mm-hmm. I plan on making another set of spirit boards from them.
I want to claim one, but I really feel like other people should have them.
These by necessity will have to be more expensive than the others just because of what it is and the investment and time and that sort of thing. But I'll probably auction them, because what I've done in the past when I've done something like this is any amount of non-existent profit, I say, as though I didn't just pick an amount and go in the red anyway. I usually pick a charity that is associated with the circumstance from which it came.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Donate to. The last set of spirit boards I made, the casket they were made from, was a veteran was interred in it originally. So I donated part of that income to a veteran's charities.
Very nice. That's very nice. And I got to see some of your work with the spirit board, and it's incredible. It's stunning, seriously. And it's all done by hand, by your hand.
There's pictures of me carving on Instagram.
Yeah. That's right. That's right.
I thought I was going to lose a thumb during that.
Well, didn't you have to sew yourself back together?
I did. I had to sew my thumb back together. I was using a router at one point to do some edging on one of them, some decorative edging. I used chisels for a lot of it, but here I was with a power tool. Like, that made sense. And I hit a knot in the wood, and it skipped, and I ran the blade through my hand.
Okay, my butthole just slammed shut.
I know. Seriously. Oh, mine too. I went into full emergency mode because I was like, oh, this is going to be horrible. So I immediately put pressure and had it over my head, and I'm laying on the floor with my hand in the air, counting the requisite amount of minutes, making sure my heart is slowed down enough before I take pressure off.
Right.
And it wasn't nearly as bad as I expected, but I was prepared for it to be.
Did you saw Bone, didn't you?
Oh, yes.
Oh, God.
Oh, yes.
Whoa.
But I did not nip into that ulnar artery. So...
Yeah,
could have been worse.
You sent me a picture of you, I think that your spouse took, stitching yourself up. And I think my response was, you're a fucking badass. My God. I mean, guys, seriously, if I laid myself open to the bone anywhere, I'm just going to tell you anywhere on my body, if I did, but specifically my hand that, you know, this thing, the end of my arm that I use for a lot of stuff, I would probably just pass out. Seriously, I'd do a lot of screaming and then pass out.
I have to masturbate with that hand. God.
I mean, seriously, God damn it. Now I'm going to have to learn how to be ambidextrous. Shit. As if I don't already know, please.
For anyone who's heard me being like a very serious, compassionate death worker on a different podcast, I'm very sorry. I'm a person and I'm multifaceted.
Yeah, I mean, you can have your professional persona. And that can be very closely related to your non-professional persona. And you just, you know, but still, you're a human being. And you probably masturbate, you know, and fart and
probably
burp and barf when you get sick and take doo-doo and, you know, whatever.
So, wonder how I can get a hold of my enemy's poop so I can nail things in.
I need to start researching. There are some shits I'd like to nail a coffin nail through. You know, I mean, like, who amongst us doesn't know somebody whose poop they want to put a coffin nail through? Come on.
I think people overlook how sort of social justice oriented necromancy can be, though. It's a kind of magic that really has a lot of avenues for justice and, you know, righting wrongs, healing, those kinds of things. It's a shame that it's so overlooked.
Would you equate, or I guess not equate, but would you ever, equate justice magic with hexing or cursing? Are they different to you, or are they somehow conjoined somehow, sometimes?
I think they're different. And I hardly ever, and by hardly, I mean maybe twice in my life, mm-hmm. have done cursing, and hexing isn't something I really work with either. Mm-hmm. Here's my thing. I think most of the time when we talk about doing those kinds of things, we're talking about things really personal to us, usually. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, there are exceptions to that, like the situation in Ukraine. A lot of us are doing strong magic for that sort of thing. But I think that's distinct, and I'll come back around to that. But you have to really, I think, hate someone to curse them. And hate is an emotion that is strongly associated with... Hate is strongly associated with love.
Sure.
We hate things because they are interfering with things we love, preventing us from love, breaking things that should be loved. Right? It's there. And I think the situation really has to call for it. And for me, it has only ever called for it when that harm was directed towards someone other than myself. I would never curse someone because they were causing harm to me.
Okay.
A hex, I think most people would colloquially define that as sort of a non-specific or instinct-based kind of harm. Mm-hmm. I've heard people define it a lot of different ways. And for me, it's just not specific enough, so I don't really go there. One of my favorite magical acts when I'm in a situation where you get that sort of fuck you instinct about something, mm-hmm. they cut you off in traffic, fuck that, yeah. or whatever. Yeah. Not really. Who's cursing people in traffic? But I like to say, may they get what they deserve. And when I say it, I direct my intention to the gods, because you're giving it over to the gods to decide. You don't know all the context that has led up to that moment, mm-hmm. that one exchange. Maybe what they deserve is healing or love or something they just don't have. And maybe they deserve to get diarrhea tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I can let the gods decide that. And that has nothing to do with my own energetic payback, karma, if we want to use that word.
Yeah, you never know if somebody's a chronic asshole or if they like just left their dead spouse.
Just leave a funeral?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. I mean, you know, so you don't want to nail a coffin nail through their doo-doo if they just left their spouse at a mortuary, you know?
Right. So I like to use that because it lets me let go of it. And you do have to let go sometimes. Hanging on to things doesn't do anything for you but poison you. So
right. This is not by any means a new phrase, but I think it's been given a new lease on life on TikTok. A lot of like social justice TikTokers that I follow say, "May you have the day you deserve." You know, instead of "have a nice day, asshole," or whatever. And I think that in and of itself is spell work. You know, not yeah. It can be. It's not always.
Sure.
But it certainly could be. "May you have the day you deserve, you motherfucker." Or, you know, "May you have the day you deserve, lady who just gave $100 to a woman outside of a 7-Eleven who doesn't have what she needs." You know?
When I take that route, I always try to be neutral. One, I think it's... If I try, God, I suck so much. I'm not fun at all.
What? Like, I disagree wholeheartedly.
I think for me, if I'm choosing that route, and I do try and choose it, it's not about peacefulness. It's not about harm none. It's not about me being a Wiccan. It's none of that shit at all. It's about the kind of person I choose to be every day. And it's about what I want to feel and put into the world, who I want to be.
Right.
And if I choose that, may you get what you deserve. Mm-hmm. I try and be at peace with it and neutral about it. I don't try and add any feelings or context to what I say because I'm giving it over to the gods. And I feel like to add context or intention or emotion to it is to almost say, "I'm not trusting you to get it right."
Yeah. Okay. I get that.
But that's not to say I don't do strong magic all the time. It's just different. Like, I've been doing magic in the direction of this Ukraine situation.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
This particular ritual is, I don't know, it's very practical in its own way, I guess. I had on ice some blood. I've got a whole freezer with just blood in it that people have gifted me, or mostly my own. I have pints and pints of my own blood in it that I use for rituals.
Things you don't hear every day for 500, Alex.
I was so sad the last time the power went out because I was like, no,
my blood's gonna go bad.
It didn't. It worked out.
Okay, but good.
Piling ice in there. As I always volunteer death care work, and some of the things I'll ask for, if the family's willing, and there's no parameters and no demand or anything like that, but I might ask for a little bit of blood, and I might ask for bath water,
right,
from the deceased, and I'll use them to make things. And this is part of my supplying ethical, responsible necromantic goods. If they want to provide them, knowing that I'll give them to other people,
right,
then I have that. But I had a little bit of blood from a Russian immigrant who had died, and so I put it through some thinner and put it in a hydroponic garden as water that I'm sprouting sunflower seedlings
in. Oh, wow. That's amazing. And it just happens to be the Ukraine flower.
In the blood of a dead Russian.
Yeah. Yeah. That didn't go over my head, I promise. That was right. The biggest part of it, actually. Like I said, the intro for this, I did say that I do know a lot of witches around the world that are lending energy and lighting their candles. And I don't just mean lighting candles. I mean like lighting candles with spells attached to them. And then also lighting candles.
I think too, that kind of speaks to the regenerative quality of death magic. You know, we can look at that spell a lot of different ways. It's very practical.
Yeah.
It's very healing. Mm-hmm. We could talk about the implication of death and decay, but also of regrowth.
Right.
And I hope that in the end that I plan to, you know, grow these seedlings to full size and grow them and save seeds from them and grow more sunflowers. And I'm going to keep doing that.
Nice.
I plan to upkeep that for the rest of my life if I have to. Because that's the point of it, right? That's grow fields of sunflowers if we need to. Send those seeds to other people to grow and just keep doing it.
I have a, a little baggie of sunflower seeds that came from a very dear friend's garden. And they're to plant. So those will be planted at our new house this when spring actually arrives in Amarillo, because it takes a while sometimes. So, and that's, those are earmarked for that. I didn't plant them last year for whatever reason, and I'm glad I didn't, because now I have them. So there'll be a little bit of magic involved in that too. So I have a really stupid question for you. What music do you rage to when you are either angry or motivated?
Oh God, what a weird one. So funny thing. Uh-huh. I love making playlists. I'm a playlist person. Okay. And I just happened to have my iTunes open on the screen beside this window because I was updating some stuff. But one of my playlists is called Mad Music.
That's what I'm talking about.
And I could hit some high points if you wanted.
Sure.
Get Out by Circus Survive. The Dark Sentencer by Coheed and Cambria. I'm wearing their t-shirt right now from the tour. 46 and 2 by Tool. Imaginary Enemy by Circus Survive. Knife Party by the Deftones.
I just love that title.
Megalomaniac
so much.
By Incubus. Yep. Yes.
Knife Party.
I did a ritual to that once and everyone was dancing around with their athamis playing The Floor is Lava and it was great.
Nice. I raged, generally I do it on, we have an Amazon Echo. We have those in several rooms. So, you know, you can just like say, wake word, play whatever. And I was raging to Veruca Salt. And I just always forget like how empowering all that shit is. It's kind of like Riot Girl music, you know, which I'm really... I'm not generally super into Riot Girl music. There's nothing wrong with it. It just isn't the thing that I raged to yesterday. Anyway, the next thing I want to ask you is, what is your favorite form of divination? That's part A. And part two is, what do you think is the most underrated form of divination?
Oh, my favorite form of divination is osteomancy. I read with human bones. I have a set that I created. And shameless plug, I do readings. So.
Oh, shameless plug, mortellus.com.
Let me state for the record that anything I do or have or offer that, you know, if you have a financial barrier, let me know and I'll make sure you get what you need.
Nice. So are these finger bones or... Have you got a giant femur or what do you generally use?
They're all skulls, 100%. I have an assortment. I have 20 something pieces in my set and they are finger bones, carpals, broken pieces of other bones.
Right.
They're assorted. It just depends on the piece.
Osteomancy, if you don't know, is like bone throwing. So... Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, obviously.
People use bone throwing pretty colloquially and sometimes to mean reading with curios like dice and buttons and those kinds of things. But I mean specifically with actual bones. Yes.
Okay.
Human in particular. But most underrated, I would have to say, and this is such a tricky question because I have to... that are very much my favorites. And I wouldn't be very on brand if I did not say osteomancy because it's definitely my favorite. My most used form of divination, like multiple times a day, is with dice, though. I read with a D20, like you might play Dungeons & Dragons with.
Right.
I have a set made of opal. I have a set made of lapis. I have some wooden ones. And I have some bone ones. And they're all consecrated to different purposes, and I read with them all the time. And I think that's a pretty underrated method, by which I mean bringing things that you like to play with into your magic.
Right.
I think people don't have enough fun with their magic generally. And I'm not talking about like silly chaos magic stuff. I'm talking about getting creative with things in your life that you love.
What's an example of that?
Examples of that. I'm a trad witch. I'm Gardnerian, and people think stuffy, uptight, whatever, all the time. I mean, that's the perception, I think, probably. But I take that into all corners of my life. For example, most of the knives in my kitchen are consecrated as either Athami's or white-handled knives, and I use them for all kinds of magic. I have a rolling pin that's consecrated as a wand.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
I have a wooden spoon that's consecrated as a wand.
I do too, actually.
I have a few plates that are consecrated as pentacle tiles. I'd like to get wacky and ritual sometimes. I've done this in the past, I'd use like a small, I know you know what I mean, but like the mini size cheesecake. Use it for a pentacle, and I draw the symbols on top with like chocolate syrup, and then at the end of the ritual, use it for libations.
That's very nice. It's similarly, all of my, well, not all of my pendants, but the pendants that I wear the most often, like my, I have a pentacle that's sort of my everyday working pentacle. I don't wear it every day, but, and then I have some keys, and then I have a couple different symbols. Those are all consecrated for me. And mostly they're consecrated to be used as pendulums, because I don't always carry a pendulum with me, but if I leave the house, I usually have a pendant on. So, and I've ducked into the bathroom before and taken that thing off and said, you need to tell me what I'm supposed to do here, you know? So the most underrated form would be using like a D20.
Yeah, I think dice get overlooked a lot.
Yeah, you introduced me to that recently. So that's pretty cool. I don't know why it never occurred to me to do that. And it's like even and odd, right? Like, so on even numbers.
It depends on the method. I use the method that appears in the Greek magical papyri, which does use even and odd as a method. But ashahedron, which what you would call a 20-sided die, are common in historical and archaeological finds. And evidence shows that they were used interchangeably for magic and play, which I love that. I love that.
Yeah,
you might have had these ancient pieces being used 1 minute for gambling and the next minute for divination.
Yeah.
And I think that's really special. There are some pieces, unfortunately they're not on display, they're held in museum collections, but there are some Egyptian pieces where each of the 20 faces has a different deity marked on it.
Oh my god, wow.
So you'd roll the die to determine what deity was interacting with you in a particular situation.
Oh, wow.
Which I think is really interesting.
Okay, so do you play D&D?
I do. I don't play Dungeons & Dragons specifically because I'm a 3.5 nerd, but I play Pathfinder.
What does 3.5 nerd mean?
Oh, gosh.
Oh, do we have time?
Levels of nerdy. Gosh. Oh, so you've probably downloaded like software program, and there's like the beta edition and the alpha edition, and then if they update it might be 1.5 or 1.2 or whatever. Yeah. So when Dungeons and Dragons first came out, that would have been first edition.
Okay.
Dungeons and Dragons 3.5 was my favorite. When they discontinued it, they changed the game a lot. But Pathfinder used their open license source to recreate that in a different format. So that is what I play.
Okay. Yeah. So I live in a household of geeks as a non-geek. My husband will occasionally, I'll say something off the cuff that is a little geeky, and he'll say, "Oh, you're being assimilated," you know, and then he'll start going, one of us. And I'm not really, I'm not into sci-fi at all. And I married somebody who's totally into sci-fi, you know, and my stepson is as well. So
does anyone in your house play tabletop RPGs?
Yeah. My stepson has a regular D&D game, and he's just started DMing. So if you don't know what that means, and I didn't, it means he's the dungeon master for his group sometimes. So, yeah. And my husband used to play D&D, and I think he probably, if he said, "Hey kiddo, roll me up a character," he would, you know, immediately play. So
I, will not impress anyone by saying this, but I am a 4-star Paizo GM. I've been running games a long time, and you have to run thousands of hours of games to become a 4-star.
Okay, four-star Paizo GM. I don't know what any of those words mean.
Dungeon Master is copyrighted for Dungeons and Dragons. Mm-hmm. Pathfinder uses Game Master, so it's a GM.
Okay, and Paizo is an Italian word, it sounds like. I have no idea what that is.
Paizo is the company that writes and produces Pathfinder.
Okay, gotcha. And 4-star is you being like a 33rd degree Mason in Paizo.
Right, I've got nerd cred.
Nerd
cred. The only way to get a 5th star is if, like, the CEO of the company happens to meet you and they can give it to you manually.
Oh, there's seriously, like, a star rating thing. Oh, yes. My God. Well, I am in the presence of royalty, clearly.
If we're talking about stuff I think is underrated and talking about nerd things, I can bring that back around to my book, actually.
Please do.
Your spouse and your stepson might get a kick out of this, but okay. I really do think people are really shy about incorporating their fandoms and their hobbies into their magic. Like, it somehow devalues what we're doing in either direction, right? And I think that...
Are you familiar with S.J. Tucker? Do you know her?
Yes. Yes,
she
I do.
She absolutely does that. I love her so much. She's so sweet. Little pixie. I adore... And she'll text me after an episode airs and, like, tell me what her favorite part was. So, Sooch, I love you. She does that all the time.
I was so like nerdy happy one day when she ordered some candles from my website.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, but nevertheless, I like combining with my magic with play and hobbies. And in the Pathfinder universe, there are deities in these games, mm-hmm. fictional deities, and one of my favorite is Phirasma. Phirasma is the goddess of death.
Okay. And so, of course, that's one of your favorites, yeah.
Of course. And inside this fictional world, that deity has a holy text. And that holy text is called The Bones Fall in a Spiral.
Oh, no kidding. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So, I totally get it now.
I got permission to incorporate it into the book.
I'm very impressed by that. That's really neat.
There are in the game devotional rituals that you can do for those deities, and some of them I think are really powerful, and I've incorporated them into my real world magic. One such appears in that book. I got permission from Paizo to include it and sort of adapt it as a real world ritual. And in the game, it states that the way to show your devotion to Phirasma, the goddess of death, is to collect small bones whenever you can throughout your life, from your food, found on the ground, whatever. And when you have enough, to go into a clearing at night and make a spiral out of those bones. And on a slip of paper at the open end, you write the name of someone who was recently born. And in the center of the spiral on a slip of paper, you write the name of someone recently deceased. And you walk that spiral. You remind yourself of the connectedness of life and death and the inevitability of death. And I found that to be really powerful. So I brought it into my magic.
It's very comforting. I think it sounds it is very magical, but it's very comforting as well. That's a really lovely story. Thank you for sharing that very much.
But from a game,
reverence and mirth, right? I mean, that all makes sense.
Exactly.
Magic should be reverence and mirth. So, I mean, there's nothing like having a really serious ritual and then you set yourself on fire and everyone laughs as long as there's not, you know, third degree burns. So that to me, I've watched it happen. It did not happen to me. I just want to put that out there, but reverence and mirth.
I feel like most people's childhoods really set them up to believe that stop, drop, and roll was going to be more relevant. But maybe it is if you're a pagan, maybe. Maybe.
Stop, drop, and roll. And also, did you ever, I don't know if where you grew up, you had a lot of tornadoes. But here in Texas, we're in Tornado Alley. So there's a meme going around that made me like snort laugh out loud. I like almost scream laughed. It's a picture of like an elementary school desk. And it says, got my Texas storm shelter in the mail today, because in school you are taught to go under your desk and put your hands interlaced above your head and crouch down for a tornado. And that's going to keep you safe, you know, under your little tiny flimsy desk. So everybody in Texas that grew up here knows that.
I would be happy to explain how that's useful if you like.
Please. I mean, seriously, you don't even have to ask my permission. Just tell me.
So the most likely outcome of being caught in a bomb explosion, a tornado, a hurricane, anything like that was flying debris. You are going to be injured by that debris.
Yeah.
And oftentimes it doesn't take much to stop it. Mm-hmm. So your desk is helpful in that way. But putting your arms over your head and crouching like that, one, you're making yourself a smaller target. Right. Two, you are protecting your internal organs and your brainstem with four of the densest bones in your body. Your arms and legs in places are denser than concrete. So by tucking your knees up against your chest, you're protecting your heart and other soft, squishy bits with your femurs. Right. And by putting your hands over your head, you're protecting your brainstem with layers and layers of very dense finger and arm bones. So it better that you break your arm or leg than sever something vital. So,
yeah, that's absolutely, I remember them explaining it to us like that. So that did make sense. But I never really remembered that part. I always just thought, this desk isn't gonna fly away if there's a tornado. You know, I mean, like, seriously, that's all I could ever think of was, this is stupid. And fortunately, I've been through one tornado for sure, and maybe two, but it might have been a microburst. But I never had a tornado while I was in school happen, but we had lots of tornado drills. So in a drill, it's perfectly fine to be like, you know, this is some bullshit, you know, you know what I mean? Because it's not happening. Right. But we really all kind of did go, like, this would protect us from a tornado. But yeah, that's absolutely right, that you're protecting all your vital organs, and your hands interlaced like that becomes super strong, and better to cut off a finger than to cut your spinal cord or your brainstem.
Exactly.
Yup, you're right.
You're most likely to be hurt by exploding glass in a tornado or a hurricane because of the pressure.
Yep.
The desk will stop glass, but think about your eyeballs and like your carotid and your jugular are surface vein and artery, and you will die in about 18 seconds if you sever those. So putting your hands around them, and plus you're turning your wrist inward, which is protecting those arteries and veins as well.
So. Right. So, not really a lot of tornadoes in North Carolina.
Not really. I've seen a couple in my life.
Yeah.
We have had to deal with hurricane fallout, quite a bit, but, I did see a hurricane when, or hurricane, saw a tornado when I was quite small that came through the area.
Yeah.
I watched it from the window. That's how not educated we were on that topic.
Oh, Lord.
It just wasn't a thing that we talked about. Amusingly, several years ago, I was at the beach for work at the time. I was doing an event I was paid to be at. And there was a hurricane, but they were like, we paid you to be here anyway. Nobody came.
Oh my God. What great work-life connection that is with that employer.
Fantastic. And it was a situation where I found myself huddling behind inside a trailer. Well, I was sitting in a tent, but I was invited into a trailer, which was not at all really safer, but it was drier, by a well-known blues musician, a well-known actor, and we sat around eating barbecue and playing poker, which is how we weathered that storm.
That is very interesting. I have been through a tornado with my mom. She told me to get under the bed with her. It was one of those, it's an older antique bed that's way off the floor, you know? And then she shoved pillows around the edge of the bed. And she said, do you hear the choo-choo train? Because I was little, and I did. I heard what sounded like a freight train. And that was the tornado going through our backyard, you know? And our yard was, pardon me, our yard was spared mainly. I think we lost some patio furniture. But the neighbors lost like a shed, you know what I mean? Like, we got pretty fortunate, but so I've been through one, and I wasn't frightened because my mom didn't want me to be frightened. But once I was old enough to be like, holy shit, that was a goddamn tornado, then I freaked out, you know. But here in Texas, that's like, that's part of life, you know. California, you got earthquakes. Texas, you got tornadoes.
I have met some of the strangest people in my life. So I've told a few people recently in interviews that, so I guess that secret's out, but I spent 10 years traveling with a carnival after I first ran away from home, and I did face and body painting and special effects makeup. So I did tons of events.
Did you really? I did not know that. Wow.
I still do that work sometimes, though. Pandemic has put a damper on it. But,
yeah.
I always found myself in the strangest places. And on that particular occasion, I got to spend a night weathering a hurricane with B.B. King and one of the werewolves from Twilight.
Oh my God. So I was going to ask you, who was it? But you said well known. And I'm like, maybe they want to keep that a secret. So I didn't ask. So B.B. King and one of the werewolves?
Yeah. Who is an amazing painter, by the way.
Oh, wow.
What a weird night that was. But
with B.B. King. Oh my God. How wonderful was he?
He was really nice,
and
actually.
Gracious and hospitable.
I mean,
seriously.
He pulled me in out of the rain to feed me, so that was nice. That was great.
That's pretty amazing. I've met a few very famous people before, but which I won't go into on this, but maybe off recording I will. But B.B. King, man, that's an amazing celebrity encounter.
I got to have breakfast. Wow. I got to have breakfast once with Ernie Hudson and Elvira, and the creepy adult who played the creepy kid in Children of the Corn.
I recently went to Stephen King trivia at a bar for trivia night with my spouse, and I can't remember that kid's character's name. That was one of the questions, and we got it wrong. But I was like, was it Zachariah? And he goes, yeah, I think maybe it was. So we wrote that down. It was nowhere close to that. But I know what you're talking about. So is he as creepy as he was in the movie as an adult?
I'm just being an asshole. He wasn't. He is very petite, though, actually. I'm quite a bit taller than him.
Well, I think he was older than the character he played in that movie. He was more mature in real life, age-wise.
I will say this, though. Elvira was nice as hell. I was at this particular event painting, and they were all there to sign autographs. I was making some morning tea in this, like, hotel VIP room, just like, you know, like you do. You're already depressed about being there. It's like, this sucks. And I've got my cup, and I'm going for some of those little, you know, cups of creamer with the peel off top or whatever. And she's like, put her hand on me. I'm like, who the fuck is this? She's like, oh, don't use that. And she
out of costume.
Yeah. And she has half and
Sandra,
half in her bag. She just gets, don't use that stuff. Just gives me creamer. It's okay.
So she recently came out.
Yes.
You know, and as she's been married for all intents and purposes for what, like 30 years, something like that?
She was really nice to me and I was nobody. I'm still nobody, but I was definitely nobody then. I don't know. It's very human, well, which is great.
I don't think you're nobody, Mortellus. I don't. You are endlessly fascinating and interesting.
Well, we're all somebody, and, you know, but we're not all Elvira.
So I want to thank you, Mortellus, for joining me again and not for the last time. I always love it when you are my guest. You can find Mortellus at mortellus.com, and that is mortellus.com. And their new book, The Bones Fall in a Spiral, is slated for release on September the 8th of 2022. And you can pre-order that book everywhere except for on their website.
I'll have some eventually, but closer to release date.
And my dog moves like a cow. There should be a new episode of this podcast every other week. Sometimes there's not, because I'm neurodivergent and, like most of the world, have crippling depression from time to time, but usually every other week. If you have questions or comments about this or any other episode of this podcast, you can usually find me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and sporadically TikTok, but I'm not great at TikTok. Wash your hands often. Wear your goddamn motherfucking mask, even if they tell you you don't have to. Don't be the sheep. Put the mask on. Get your vaccination and booster if you can, and if you haven't done so already. I finally got my booster shot, so woo! May you never hunger, and may you never thirst. As above, so below, and as within, so without. Take care of your mental health. It's just as important and no more stigmatic than your physical health. I'm Molly Dyer. This is Witchcraft Off the Beaten Path.
Your poor listeners didn't get to hear about Walter's balls.
Walter's balls! That should be a bonus. Tell me about Walter's balls.
Oh, God. You quipped about, like, old man testicles, your pituitary gland being shriveled.
Yes.
As I mentioned earlier, I have spent a lot of my adult life doing face and body painting and special effects makeup. 22 years, actually. I'm a multifaceted being.
You're an onion.
There are lots of me. And I love that work, and it has taken me interesting places in my life. And on this particular occasion, I had been asked to do body painting for a nudist resort in West Virginia, which
the
is...
9-year-old boy in me just woke up.
Well, those are words you're not sure about putting together, right? Nudist and West Virginia, that conjures a mental picture, I feel like.
Does conjure some mental pictures.
It did for me. Nevertheless, lovely place with lovely people. And yeah. They were having this event that was sort of themed, and that was fun. There was a costume party, which sort of defies sense for a nudist resort.
How do you have a costume party in a nudist colony?
That is a good fucking question.
I mean, maybe like a mask over your eyes, like the Lone Ranger, and that's your...
Right. I saw a lot of like kitty cat whiskers and ears type stuff. That was... Mm-hmm. But nudist resorts, I've learned over the years, painting are largely populated by older individuals, which... It just doesn't appeal to a younger crowd. Something about the setting of it just doesn't appeal to a younger set of nudists. And being a Gardnerian Wiccan, I practice Skyclad a lot, so I'm not shy about being nude around people. I don't give shit. So who cares? My spouse, less forgiving about that whole process. He is not a practicing pagan of any flavor. We can say that he is when he's not listening, so we'll say it, but... he was very funny walking around in combat boots and a towel, which was as nude as he was willing to be most of the time. That was a look. Uh-huh. But there was a man at this event, and he sort of permanently etched into my mind. But I do know that Walter was a masseuse, you know, very nice elderly gentleman. And, you know, older folks get cold, and nudism in the mountains of West Virginia, you would think, does not suit that situation, but here we were. And so his look was like New Balance sneakers with no socks and a house coat with his name embroidered on the back, which is very classy. And he's keeping warm, he's doing his thing, you know. But Walter had this look like, I know y'all know what I'm talking about, like an elderly man, but if you were caricaturing them, if you're doing a sketch, the body's kind of the shape of a pear, round about the hips and thin at the top, but like spindly legs that point in two different directions, you know? Like a character in a delightful Studio Ghibli film. Just, it's a look.
Okay,
it's a whole look.
That's a vibe.
Yeah, right. Like you have to stand like you've just thought about squatting down or sitting,
uh-huh,
but you're not going all the way, and you walk like that with the knees pointing out. That's the vibe. this is Walter. So the last night of the event, we're in what constitutes the bar, which they just have like this cabin type building, and there's an open room in there, and there's a counter set up with liquor. It's not really a bar, but mm-hmm. these places are often like a collection of 20 best friends you're hanging out with. It's not like being at a street fair or something. It's not the same thing. I order a rum and coke, which is given to me. Was given to me in one of those red plastic solo cups.
Sure.
And right. I, without looking, took a sip of it and turned to my spouse and went, "This is all rum. There's no..." Like, I looked in the glass and it was almost utterly transparent.
Yeah, that was all rum.
The coke was just sort of waved over it and it was full to the top. This is not a bartender. You don't know what's happening.
Right.
I had eaten nothing.
It's like, so you were shit-faced. This. Were you shit-faced immediately?
Shortly. Yeah. In short order. Uh-huh. And here I am reading tarot, nude, at a costume party, power drinking rum. And my thought for like a nude costume was I was going to be like a Greek goddess type situation. So I got like this transparent purple fabric and I just sort of draped a piece over it like a toga and uh-huh. you could see through it. Everyone thought that was very cool of me. So my drunk ass was on it. And I just zoned out like someone inebriated might. And my spouse is like, "What is wrong with you?" And I was like, "I stared too long at Walter's balls." And he looks, and you can see this man walking into the room, and his testicles are like a pair of eggs in a tube sock. And oh, one God. Of them's hitting his knees, and they're just like
Walter Long balls. That's what I'm talking about.
Like a pendulum yeah. whacking oh, the knees my. Either way. Like one of those toys where you whack the two things together. You know what I'm talking about?
I do. Clackers.
The clackers, yes. Yeah. Oh, God. And I'm just watching this. Just
you got hypnotized by Walter's voice. You're getting very drunk.
You did not look at that because you couldn't look away. You were immediately in a trance. That was
no other safe place to look.
Uh-uh. I go back.
Oh, God.
There is a part two to this story. Devoid
part
of Walter.
Two?
There okay. is a part two. So
okay.
for this event, we were camping in tents. This is a bad situation for nudity in the first place. It'd be tent camping in the nude. That's the worst. Oh, yeah. Laid on a stick. No. So we're in our tent and it is like 3 a.m. I wake up. No good ideas are had after 2 a.m. in the first place. I wake up and I realize I am still drunk as hell. Like, I just metabolized all that rum.
Oh
and
God.
I'm way drunker than I was before. This was a bad experience. And I need to piss like nobody's ever had to piss.
Right.
So I like stumble, crab walk out of my sad tent or whatever into the woods. I'm drunk. I can't find my glasses. It's dark. I'm in right. West Virginia. I don't know what's
naked.
That means.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm nude. This is a terrible situation. Now, I don't know why it didn't occur to me to just piss in the woods. That would have made a lot of sense, right? But I did not do that. Sense and reason had gone out the window at this point. So
this
I'm
is
trying.
Great.
I'm trying to walk back to this building. I'm trying so hard.
I'm so happy right now. I'm so happy. This is so funny.
The best bonus content that we're doing.
Right.
I get to the door. I'm like, oh my God, I made it. It's locked.
Oh, great.
It's so locked. And then at that particular moment, I met what I can only assume was a fae creature. We'll write this down. We'll call this a magical experience of some flavor.
Okay.
But
okay. All right.
I see this glowing light coming at me around the corner of the building. And there is a woman, like a middle-aged woman with this red bouffant hair, mm-hmm. naked as a jaybird, of course she was, with a novelty Harry Potter wand with the light-up tip. And she says, "Come with me." And I just did.
Because it's 2 a.m., you have to pee, you're naked, and someone said, "Come with me." So that's what you do.
I'm drunk off my ass. It's like...
Yeah.
She knew another way in the building, and she escorted me not only to the toilet, but back to my tent with her glowing wand.
Oh, what a glorious fae creature.
Now, I didn't see that person at the event prior to that moment or after, so I assume that I met some sort of, like, protector of drunks or something
yeah.
in the woods.
Or the patron goddess of bladders.
Or something, whatever I met.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of locked
oh God,
doors
really
and drunks. I do know that she saved me from Well, I wouldn't have pissed my pants. I didn't have any, but you
We're
know.
wearing pants. Can't
Right.
piss your pants.
I cannot piss them because I didn't.
I think by extension, the same way, if you're not wearing pants, you can't shit your pants either.
Right.
So that's good news for nudists. I'm just gonna
That
say it's good
is
news.
good. That's good news.
That's a bonus.
My
Well,
spouse
you can't shit your pants if you're not wearing pants.
did say that he learned a lesson from that adventure. It was his first time ever going with me to an event like that, and he said that he learned that it was both wonderful and ill-advised to shoot pool with nudists.
Oh, God.
He's like, that's a lot of leaning over tables that nobody needed.
All I can think of is the back of ball sacks all night long.
Yep.
That's your view.
Yeah,
Yeah.
correct.
That's hysterically funny. Thank you for sharing that. That was the bonus content
Bonus.
for this episode of Witchcraft of the Beaten Path.